Can a survey change the future? Maybe this one can. Cannabis education is inconsistent at best and missing or misleading at worst. How can we make cannabis education better? What if we ask people who use or are thinking about using cannabis a bunch of questions? What if we ask pharmacists who could be teaching people about cannabis a bunch of questions? And then, what if the answers from those questions were used to help pharmacists teach people about cannabis better? Well, this is exactly what pharmacists as cannabis educators, or PACE, are doing. And PACE needs you to fill out a survey. PACE needs as many people as possible to fill out a survey. PACE needs you to fill out a survey on or before May 12th. This is a limited time offer for you to help change the future of cannabis education. To participate, go to promo.reefermed.ca. That's promo, P-R-O-M-O.reefermed.ca.
When people got together, joints were passed around.
Marijuana is a drug with potential health impact.
I have never seen a cannabis overdose.
It's Reefer Madness, the podcast, with Trevor and Kirk.
Kirk, we're back.
Yeah, we're back.
We're back again. So, you got to talk to somebody who you might have read some of his written materials back in the 80s.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The last two interviews have been European. And so, Jorge Cervantes is a pseudonym for George Van Patten, who has over 50 books out in gardening. And the majority of those books are how to garden cannabis. So this guy's been publishing books for as long as I've been nursing. And again, I've made no bones about this. My introduction to cannabis was when I was in junior high school. So I went to a lot of head shops in the late 70s. And, you know, I can remember the first edition of Heavy Metal magazine, the comic book, and thinking, well, this is a silly book, but should have bought it. But I would sit for hours going through record stores in those days and head shops magazines and High Time magazines and Fraboli's Furry Freak Brothers magazines and How to Grow Your Own Cannabis magazines. And I'm pretty sure it would have been one of this fellow's, because in the interview I described to him what I think his magazine looked like or his grow book looked like, and he said it was. And it was literally back in the day, Kestetner on a piece of paper folded in half with staples, you know, quite literally. And I didn't know he was in Seattle. He was publishing in Seattle. And for the listeners to know that we talk about this in the interview, and I got back to him, I texted him back, and he was telling me that more than likely, let me go to the text, more than likely those books were brought up by the Hells Angels, the bike gangs back in the day.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Story gets even more interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's how things got distributed back in the day, right? The motorcycle gangs and
tell me a little bit about the pseudonym and some wigs and just reiterate for people, because sometimes it's hard to remember now that 80s, this was not legal stuff he was writing about.
No. This fella was, so 1983 is when he was growing. So I guess I must have seen his book after I got back from Alberta. But he, 1983, he's starting to write books about how to grow a Schedule I drug. So he's got pictures of him wearing wigs and hats and sunglasses, and he's in marijuana fields and basically he's doing this all underground press. If you go to his webpage, he tells stories about how friends of his are being arrested. He gets into a little bit of it in the episode. But you know, I was really struggling with this interview, because, and I think I tell him that I was quite overwhelmed. I did not know where to take this conversation, because I'm talking to one of the gurus of growing cannabis in the world. there's no doubt in my mind anybody that has grown cannabis in the last 40 years has read one of his books, right? He's got over 50 books out. So we're not a grow up program. You go to the, go to our friends that are doing, doing the podcast. We had the podcast that we talked to them, High and Homegrown. Like those guys teach you how to grow cannabis. Our podcast isn't going to teach you to grow cannabis. So as I was talking to George, to Jorge, I just realized this is a My Cannabis story. So as you listen to this episode, it's a My Cannabis story, right? So that's what I got out of this. And it's kind of cool when we stumble onto some of these people that are known in the industry, and we get them on our little podcast. And that's what I think that's kind of cool here is that we have a fella that put himself out there back in the day. And really, in some jurisdictions, you still cannot grow cannabis, right? So it's we're just taking it for granted. We're not allowed to grow cannabis in Manitoba. I grow medicinal cannabis. But anyway, so that's what it is, Trevor. It's more of a My Cannabis story. I'm now rambling. I think I'm rambling.
That's okay. No, it was a good ramble, and let's get into Jorge, and then we'll have a quick chat afterwards.
So how do you want to be introduced as? Your alias, your real name? How would you like to do this?
Yeah, either. Well, Jorge Cervantes, that's the way everybody knows me. And many people know my real name that I, released... I don't know, maybe a few years ago because, well, it was just tired. I just got tired of hiding. I'm proud of what I am, what I do. I'm proud of who I am. And I just, but everybody knows me como Jorge Cervantes. I try not to take stuff too seriously. Stuff gets in my way.
I'm just going to say, sir, how's that? As I said to you on the phone, I am completely overwhelmed by your resume. And when I was trying to plan for this interview, I have no clue on which way to go. And this is a first for me. I usually come well-researched. I have a thesis. I have a plan. I look at your resume. 35 years you've been publishing.
40 years.
40. Okay, so as long as I've been nursing, you've been publicizing how to grow cannabis, marijuana, hemp, horticultural, underground, above ground, overground. Your friends have been arrested. So I'm going to just ask you for your story, because I'm going to bet most of our listeners don't know your story. So let's start from the very beginning. What kind of a
pull do you have anyway? Let's see, I got to look things up.
Well, we are a very small podcast trying to get attention. And we've been doing it for 5 years. Trevor is a pharmacist. I'm a registered nurse. Our audience can be medical personnel because we challenge the system about medical cannabis, but we also have people that are outside the medical field, and we try to do, we've got 117 episodes and everything from deep down technical science to just human interest stories.
Cool.
Yeah, so when I saw that you were advertising your latest publication, I said, we've been looking for a horticulturalist to come on our show for 5-6 years now, because I've got all sorts of questions about the plant. But when so we'll spend half the conversation on that. But I just want to talk about your story, man. I mean, back in the early 80s, you were doing all this underground publication. I remember seeing your book in head shops back in the day,
Yeah, it was pretty tough days, I have to say.
Yeah, so if you don't mind, and I know you've done this a million times because I even downloaded your media package. And like I said, I am completely overwhelmed. I don't know where to begin. When I introduce you to our listeners, I'll go over what I've done. But I just figure the best way to get your story for our listeners is just let you tell it, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Are you a gardener? Like, how did you?
Oh, yeah, of course. I've been gardening my whole life. I love gardening. I grew up, growing plants. I've always have.
University educated, college educated, or just
homegrown? No, no, not at all. Let's see. Actually, I'm liberal arts educated, and I'm liberal arts educated. I'm not used to blowing my own horn. I'm used to giving information and helping people. That's kind of what really works for me. I like it. It's fun. I feel real useful and helpful when I do that.
Okay.
But as far as having a big ego and stuff, that's not me. I could care less, you know. All those guys with big egos really turn me off. I just leave the room when they're around.
What made you say to yourself, I'm going to write a book in 1980? Was it the first book?
1983, actually, is when it first came out.
So what made you say, I'm going to write a book about growing cannabis?
Yeah. Well, what happened is, I got out of university. I'd been to, I'd done quite a bit there. I went to university in Oregon and also in Spain and Mexico. So I get out of school. And I don't know what the hell to do. And I was quite good with gardening, you know, so I started cutting trees. that's the only place you can make any money is climbing. And I've always been, pretty strong and agile and stuff. So I started climbing trees and taking trees out, trimming brush and all of that. But that got old and I could see that wasn't going anywhere. And I kept cutting myself, and the chainsaws were pretty rough. And I had several gardening businesses, but I started growing cannabis up in the hills behind Santa Barbara, California, Southern California. And I left there, traveled for more than a year. Went to South America because, I talk Spanish, so it's real easy for me. It's just easier to be there. I have a lot of Latin friends too. What happened was I was in Portland, Oregon, and that's right at the beginning when indoor growing just started. When people had those great big halide lights, the great big 1,000 waters. And actually indoor growing started in Seattle and BC, but technically it started in Seattle. And a guy named Steve Murphy, I can really give him credit for being the first indoor grow store. And he used to be in the university district. He's a good friend of mine, has been for years. I know all those guys up over there in Seattle. But what happened, I didn't know him back then. I met him a few years later, because we all kind of, have to get along. He's a great guy. In fact, he's been in business 52 years now. 52 years. I'm really pretty blown away by that. And the store is open 52 years. Now his son Sean runs it. They don't even sell lights anymore. Halide lights. They sell house plants. And he moved over to Ballard, Washington, and he's right on the canal. It's really, really nice place he's got. But what happened was everybody was growing indoors. And so I started growing indoors in Portland, Oregon. And I could see, it was just mainly tough guys who were doing it. There's some old hippies or young hippies doing it. Now we're all old. But I could see that they were growing indoors. And then also bikers. There's tons of bikers. I I know, so many bikers. Good people in general, you know, a little rowdy sometimes, but good people in general. And anyway, nobody seemed to know much. Nobody seemed to know much about gardening, and there was a lot of just flat out bullshit going on. They would make things up, and people would withhold information, and information is power. But it just didn't seem right to me, you know, that they would withhold information from other people, and then they would also get a lot of things wrong. So what I did was I made a survey, because a few of the jobs I had in the summer, one of them was a survey research job, and I did that, and so I knew how to give surveys. You know, I mean, I knew how to make write an instrument. That's what they call them, a survey. It's an instrument to collect information, and then I aggregated the information. And then it's right when the computer started, I bought a K-Pro computer. And I'd also worked during high school in a printing company, a local newspaper. So I knew how to take photographs. I actually was pretty good at it. And I could read and write, you know? So it's like, gee, what else do I need to know? I mean, I got all the basic skills. So I wrote a book. Wrote the first one. It was called Indoor Marijuana Horticulture. And after that, what the heck did I do? I went around, I shopped it around, tried to get somebody to publish it, because, you know, I didn't know anything, and nobody wanted to publish it. In fact, the biggest publisher back then was Andor Press, and they were in Berkeley, California. And they've since gone out of business. I'm still in business. nobody would publish it. So I decided, well, heck, I don't know how to run a press. I'll just print it myself. And so that's what I did. I printed it myself. I rented time on a local, a quick print place, and printed up, 1,000 copies? About 1,000 copies. And then I tried to get those distributed. Nobody would distribute them. So I just put them in my car and drove around and started to sell them. And most people wouldn't pay for them up front. I had to put them on consignment. I could sell them at head shops. I could sell them at a few indoor garden stores, but there's all those RICO laws came into effect back then. And that made things real tough, because you can't put the information with the lights. If you put them together, then you're an ongoing criminal organization. And later that came to, cause some real problem. One day, 120 people got arrested during Operation Green Merchant. It's October 1989. I forget the date. It was pretty traumatic for me, though, I'll tell you. Anyway, that's what I decided to do. And it worked. The first year I sold 6,000 books. And then so the next year I was able to make more books, but I could send them to an actual printer, a web printer and stuff that would put a spine on the books. I just moved, so I don't have any of the books with me. I have just, I think, one copy of the original book. It's saddle stitched, or it's got staples in it. It didn't even have a spine. But that's how I got started. And I just gave good information, told the truth. That's it. I just tell the truth. That's all I did. And I had a few hurdles to overcome.
I bet. I grew up in Victoria.
Okay, Victoria, BC.
Yes, sir. So
okay, okay, so, yeah, out there on the island.
Yeah, so I'm very familiar with that West Coast culture and the cannabis marijuana culture of the 70s and early 80s.
Yes,
and I remember your book. And I'm thinking it was, because I remember it was sort of on just normal paper, folded in half with staples in it. So it would have
been.
I remember that book. So talking to you is, I think we're about the same age.
I'm 70 years old.
Oh, well, okay. You got a few years on me. I'm 62, so I just outed myself.
Okay.
But I left Victoria in 82 and went off and started a nursing career. But you know, let's jump, because I think I can give, when I talk to Trevor, I can fill in the blank. So let's talk about the plant, okay?
Sure.
And I want to know more about the plant, and because I grow medicinal cannabis for myself.
And where are you located now?
I'm in the center of the continent. I'm in a place called Dauphin, Manitoba.
Okay. Man, you're out there on the prairies, man.
Yes, sir. Well, it's a little, it's the prairies, but we're between two hills that we call mountains.
Okay. You got real mountains there.
Yeah. We have hemp farms all around us, and we've done stories on the hemp farms and stuff. So, so as a grower myself, I want to know a couple basic things for our listeners. Sativa, indica, what's the difference?
Well, I don't know. I mean, see, the way all that stuff started, it started back to this guy, Linnaeus, his Swedish guy. Swedish, yeah. I think Swedish, yeah. Anyway, yeah. He was the one that classified the plant kingdom back about 1870, 1876. No, 1776. And during that was when they only had sailboats, sail ships, you know. That was before the steam engine, and they didn't have, the communication was real slow. So what he did is he classified everything as cannabis sativa, everything, all the plants. But he didn't know about all the plants. He only knew about the ones that he had access to. And sativa just means silvestre, like wild, you know, like a volunteer or wild, but it just means common wild plant. So that's why he called it cannabis sativa. And most of the ones that he saw were narrow long leaf. But then later, some years later, the Brits, they were over in China and India, but mainly India, and they came up with the cannabis indica, or Indian hemp, they called it. So there was the main distinction, two different basic types of plants, and one came from the West and one came from the East, and it's where they originated. So it's really been a big problem of nomenclature, and they're just about ready to throw the two out because there's so many similarities between the two. In general, nowadays, the sativa plant's considered taller and more distance between the plant inner nodes. And the leaves are considered larger, with a big root, and they also have a huge root system. That's really key, because you know you can make grafting. You can make grafting on the plants, so you can graft a rootstock from a sativa to an indica type or a short squat plant. But basically, it's the origin of the plant. And it's important to remember the history, how that happened.
Okay.
Because if it weren't for the history and the communications, the classification would have been much different. And so, for years, I've been a garden writer. I was, until kind of like the internet came around, and then nobody would buy your garden writing stuff or words. But what happened is with that, there's all people do is argue about who found what plant and what the name should be. There's like, I don't know, probably 5% of all varietals, plants, especially, well, old ones, new ones, they always argue about who's right and what name it should actually have in Latin. So this is not a new thing. In fact, I look for it to get more pronounced as we go forward. They're looking to classify it in a different way. But in general, today, like I say, the indica, oh, I didn't say this yet. The indica is short and squat, less distance between the inner nodes. It's usually heavier smell. It usually becomes ripe early, or it's ready to harvest earlier, late August, September, where the sativa plants, they can go, and generally they're more tropical. And like I say, Linnaeus started all this. So, and the Brits too, with India, it can go long. Well, some of them really don't become ripe at all. They can just keep flowering and flowering up for 3 years, the 12-hour ones. Yeah.
Okay. So this whole in the recreational field and medicinal cannabis, the whole indica and sativa is the upper, and just keeping the hybrids away for a moment. As a grower, do you believe that there's such a thing as, if you like, indica tends to be a more medicinal cannabis than the sativa?
I can't. I can't really say that. Okay. I can say you may have different effects from them, but medicinal, see, that's where I'm really not an expert. I don't have a good medicinal history background.
Okay.
If I did, I'd have a strong opinion, but if I'm supposed to be an expert, I got an opinion.
Fair enough.
But I don't know if it's real valid.
Well, I guess I'm looking at this interview as a grower and, you know, and as a horticulturalist, because I guess in the 40 years that you've been growing, you've become an expert of cannabis. So let's talk more about just growing cannabis. What's easier to grow, indica or sativa?
Well, it depends on where you're at. And within that, it depends on the varieties that you've got. Some plants are very, very easy to grow. For example, one of the hybrids that was real popular some years back was Blue Dream. In fact, it's still around, and it's quite easy to grow. It's hard to kill. But then you look at other plants like the Haze type plants, the HAZE. It's also a cross. Dave Watson was the guy that really did that one, that started Haze. And he's, it's real difficult to grow. It's real fidgety. It's real, it's real susceptible to over-fertilization. It's fidgety for temperature and water. So it really depends on the specific cultivar you're growing. In general, I remember before we started, I was real fortunate to know a lot of original guys, you know, that we all grew up together. We were all alive at the same time. We didn't actually grow up together. But like, for example, the Northern Lights and was a real good one to grow. It was like more of a, well, it's the heavy indica type. Actually, it came from the mountains up there above India. And then the other ones, Big Bud was a real, real easy one to grow, but those were indoor plants. And in general, it's way easier to grow outdoors or in a greenhouse, because that's what plants want. And right. With the lights today, you've got these LED lights. You can literally dial in, and there's so much more information now about LEDs and plants and the specific photons that they require. It blows me away. How much information there is. In fact, it's beyond me. I could say things, but there's people that are way, way better versed than me on a lot of this stuff.
So as a grower, if somebody is looking to start growing, what would you recommend? Soil, hydroponics, medium. What would you recommend somebody just starting out to grow their first crop?
Boy, if I was just starting out, I've always loved soil. I've, you know, get good potting soil from a nursery or good rich potting soil that you may want something that's fortified with a little bit of fertilizer in it. But I stay with the organic fertilizer. I'm just really strong with the organic because I like it. It's natural. And you're putting this stuff in your body, so you should be careful. But definitely organic soil. And the main reason for the organic soil, they call it living soil now. That's kind of a buzzword, living soil. But in a container, if you're going to grow indoors in a container or outdoors in a container, there's really not a big enough volume of soil to practice organic methods where you actually make the soil live and you nurse the soil and you nurse it along to keep it going. Basically, what you can do is you get soil and you can feed organic nutrients to the top of it and wash it out because it's totally in an environment that you can't do much with other than keep it in a container and grow it.
One of my friends is I call him Sensei. He's been growing and he grows good plants and he likes to grow in a medium. And he talks about one of the disadvantages of living soil is the bugs. And if you get bugs in your grow room, then you're toasted. So but yet I've interviewed another fella that has a composter right in his grow room and his soil everything happens in his grow room. So I'm not sure. I buy a bag of soil and throw it in and it's sterilized soil. So I try to do.
It depends. It really depends on who you talk to. I mean, when you talk about bugs, insects, soil insects, soil life, in general, it's best to stay away from like really strong soil. A lot of life in your soil. It's not the most pleasant thing to say, but you know, take your hints from the greenhouse growers that are growing bedding plants. Look at the guys that are growing. Well, right now the Navidad, the Christmas season's passed, but look at the poinsettias. See, poinsettia is a short day plant. And for example, what do they grow in? They grow in usually something similar to the UC mix, which is basically just a mix soilless mix. You know, you've got perlite, peat, and peat's kind of becoming out of favor because, well,
coconut, people are using coconut.
Everybody goes for the coconut now and the cocoa core or cocoa fiber, which is really good stuff, I have to say, because it retains a lot of moisture and as well it also retains air because you've got to have that mix of air and water with nutrients. It's really important. So soil life, you really got to watch that indoors. I'd be careful with that. Okay. I personally like soil, but because you can do a lot with it, but it's quite forgiving, see. And that's the thing I like about it. It's naturally buffered.
Okay. What do you think about scrogging?
Scrogging works really great. One of my buddies is that guy, our internet buddy, we haven't met face to face, is Northern Scrogger. And that's been really, really successful because one of the reasons why is you can get so many plants under a lamp. And if you're paying for electricity, you know, and your lamp, say it covers a 3x3 area or a 6x6, let's say 3x3 area. So it's like confined. Any of that light that hits the that doesn't hit green matter, green leaf, is wasted. So the closer those plants are, the better. And here's the other thing. This is really important. How long you keep those plants growing indoors. The shorter time you keep them in under those conditions, which are totally artificial, the better off you are.
Okay, because, so the vegetative state. So keep them indoors for the vegetative state and then move them outside for the flowering?
Well, if you can, anytime you can grow outdoors, do it. I'm totally a proponent of growing outdoors. You can control a lot more indoors or in a greenhouse, actually, preferably in a greenhouse. But you've got a lot of dynamics there in a greenhouse. You know, they're hard to keep the temperature consistent, hard to keep the humidity consistent. You've got some real dynamic stuff, you know, outside temperature, inside temperature, and sunlight. So you can open up a greenhouse in the morning, and it can be like 100 degrees Fahrenheit, or, you know, say 30, 35, 40 degrees Celsius. And that's just too darn hot. Plants don't do so well. But if you grow indoors, it's real, especially underground or in a basement, you can keep plants growing evenly. It's a real even temperature. You know, going up and down indoors or in a greenhouse is a little difficult. Yeah.
Okay. I got about 5 minutes left with you, according to my Zoom here. What do you like people to know about you? What story would you want our listeners to know most about you?
I'd like to tell people to help others. That's what I want to say. You know, share your information, share the best information you have, and be good. Just be good. Help other people. That's the big thing. And don't worry about being wrong. Make mistakes. That's the way you're going to learn, or hopefully you'll learn.
You have. You've got how many books out? 50 books?
50. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. My technical guy says, he says, look, you got to write this down for the website. How many books do you have? And I thought it was about 35, but I added everything up. It's more than 50.
Now here's a question, and it may be personal, and what I've learned from you and reading your history is that you do give back, and you have given knowledge to people about how to grow cannabis. Have you made a living off of this, man? Have you stayed out of jail, right? I mean, some of you,
which is, knock on wood, which is true.
and some of your buddies, according to your bio, weren't so fortunate. But like, have you made a living out of being a cannabis grower?
No, actually, as a grower, yeah, I did for a few years, but what happened was I talked to my wife, and she said, I said, look, I got a few choices. I can either go to Canada and grow, or I can go to Switzerland and grow, because that's when things were really ripping in Switzerland, late 90s. And she said, or I could continue to write, but that's going to be a hard road and it's going to be tough. And so she decided that I should write instead of grow. So that's what I decided to do. And I've moved quite a few times. I've lived in a lot of places. And well, in BC, I lived up there, actually in Burnaby, right next to Vancouver, and then also in the Netherlands. I lived in Amsterdam, and now I'm in Spain, and I've traveled extensively as well, Latin America, and as well Australia, Japan. I guess I hope that answers the question.
No. And when you travel, do you specifically go to cannabis places to learn how to grow cannabis from other people? Because you do have other books than just cannabis growing books.
Oh yeah, I've got a whole I've got garden books, vegetable books, flower books, hydroponic books, but yeah, indoor garden books, yeah, of other plants. Yeah, specifically, yeah, because it seems like the, everybody in the whole world knows me. I mean, it's really weird. They know me in Russia. They know me in Japan. I mean, I'm literally recognized, and Latin America, everywhere. I'm the only guy that talks Spanish, you know, right. And so there it's like close to me. I get, in fact, just last week, they want me to come to Ecuador, you know, to pay all the bill. They pay all my bill. I said, no, Ecuador is so far to go. And I get tired now.
Fair enough.
It's too much.
I went into this conversation not knowing how to start, and I don't know how to end because I don't feel I've even given you enough space to tell your story. I guess for me, we got about a minute left. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you suspected I would ask you?
No, not at all. I mean, I could go on and on. Like I said, I just don't blow my own horn very. It's a bit difficult to talk about myself. Yeah, I've done a ton of other stuff though.
Yeah,
been a lot of places, but I don't know. I mean, I'm just one of many people. A lot of people have done way more than me.
But you got 50 books out there, buddy, on how to grow cannabis, and the world is changing. I'm going to lose you here right away. I want to thank you for your time. Thank you for giving people the knowledge about growing cannabis. I'm going to read your book.
I know the one thing I want to say. This book here, we translate the Cannabis Encyclopedia, so it's 600 pages. It's really big. Okay, this book we have translated into 8 different languages. All 5 European languages. It's obviously in English because this is the only one, but it's free on my website, marijuanagrowing.com. That's important.
Just looking at
I want to flog that.
Okay.
But
and
you
I will
can
flog
get it,
it
free. Please go there and please look. It's in Russian and Japanese. The Japanese was the last we put it in.
So Kirk, before we do anything else, because I think it might be the most sort of useful thing from all of these that Jorge was talking about, talk a little bit about, I think I got this right, the Encyclopedia of Cannabis and how it's in 9 different languages and free. Just touch on that a little bit.
Yeah. His new publication's online and it's free. And this is really important to him. And this is what he wants from us, is that we put this link on our webpage and it will be there. It's an award-winning cannabis encyclopedia. It's a distinctive guide to medical marijuana cultivation and consumption. It explains all the essential techniques to grow indoors, outdoors, and in greenhouses. All gardening practices are well-researched and illustrated with easy step-by-step examples and instructions. More than 2,000 beautiful colored images illustrated in 596 page book. The book, it looks like back in the day when you had the world encyclopedias and every year you'd get the it's like that. It looks like a textbook, actually. There will be a link on our webpage. I will be reading it. I'm going to be starting a crop here in the next little while, and I will be reading this book. And that is the big story here. And if you go to his webpage again, there'll be links to our webpage. It's a fascinating story. What did you think of the interview?
Oh, it was really good. Because I know it's something that you've talked with many people about, and I don't know if you got a definitive answer, but you finally got him to talk about soil versus media. So did and because it's a legitimate question, you've asked many experts. I've been there, you know, both on and off the thing about what's the right way to do things. So So it sounds like a, for a beginner, he's leaning soil, but I'll throw in my two. I think one of the ways you can tell, okay, A, he's really humble, but B, one of the ways you can tell he really is an expert, you know, if you ask somebody a question and they know a little bit about a topic, they've got an answer right away. If you talk to somebody who studied it their whole life, yeah. there's always, well,
yeah,
it's a little this, a little that. You know, yeah. it might be this, but, you know, it could be a little bit of that. So what do you think about his answer about whether or not you should go soil?
When I listened back to the episode, you know, he's talking about soil. He really likes to grow outdoors. So his living soil, and you'll remember we talked to the Green Beaver, Paul Martin, way, way back in the industry, way back in the episodes. And I went into his basement and we called it the basement tapes. We learned from Paul how he grew in live soil. Like Paul literally had a composter in his basement. And when you walked into his basement, it was moist. It was a moist environment and, he was growing in soil. I think Jorge was basically talking about living soil outside.
Yeah, well, he did mention that a couple of times that you can't do true organic inside. But I don't think he was against soil. But again, he knew all the pros and cons. He knows so much, it's hard for him to say definitively one over the other.
Well, I have Sensei. I have a fella in town that helps me grow, and Sensei is always hit me over the head because I grow in soil. I like growing in soil because I think growing in soil is more forgiving. And it's interesting because Jorge said that. It's more forgiving, right? Growing in medium, you have to be really on the nutrients. You really have to be on the light and stuff. And you know, I'm pretty laid back with most things I do. And I don't like to get, I guess my fermentation, I'm a little hot on that, but I just don't want to get really deep into feeding my plants every stinking day. I don't want that. I mean, the whole idea for me is relax, you know, throw a little water in it, give it a little mist, you know, do a little trim. So I think I like the fact that he says soil. And like I said to you, I think I can tell a difference, but I mean, I don't know. But I think when I taste something grown in soil, it just tastes different to me.
The terroir.
And maybe that's because...
The terroir, probably. What the wine people would say.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, more than likely because I haven't bought commercial weed in such a long time. Because I have my own. And so when I am past a pre-roll, post-COVID, I do have my vaccines. I do share. I just doubted myself. That, you know, when you have something grown in chemical, it just, I don't know if it has the same taste or mouthfeel. There's just something different. It's harsher. I usually end up coughing. And whereas my stuff, I don't cough with it. And it's... I don't know. So I think soil's better only because I think it's more forgiving. It matches my style. Now, I don't use live compost. I did one year use my compost from my backyard, and it was bug-ridden. So I had bugs in my tent. So I had to spend a lot of time getting rid of those bugs and a lot of I told you souls from Sensei. So
fair enough.
So I'll be buying sterilized soil next time.
Well, we should throw this out because we always forget to the end. I'm Trevor Schufeld. I'm the pharmacist. You are?
I'm Kirk Nyquist. I am the registered nurse. We're found at Reefer Medness, the podcast, reefermed.ca. Please, go to our webpage. Please go to Jorge's webpage. Go to our webpage and click on it and check out his encyclopedia. He will teach you how to grow good cannabis. And really, if you want a sustainable world, you know, homegrown tomatoes are always the best, right? And I think homegrown cannabis is the way it should be also. So. Off you go.
I think that's as good a place as any to wrap that up. It was another good one, and we'll talk to everybody later.
And there you have it. That was another good one for sure, Trevor. And thanks, guys. Awesome episode. Thanks to Jorge. I know Kirk was very excited for this interview and very worthwhile. Make sure you download that free, massive, encyclopediatic book. It's Renee here, back at the studio. And I just want to acknowledge we produced this podcast out of the studios of CKDM Radio in Dauphin, Manitoba, which is Treaty 2 territory and the homeland of the Métis. And as always, we pay our respects to the First Nations and Métis ancestors of this land, and we reaffirm our relationships by doing so. We always end the podcast with a song that is either suitable to the topic or a request by the guest. In this case, we're choosing one that might link to the topic a little bit. The topic, of course, being growing your own marijuana. So the song that I've chosen, which is very cool, is Cypress Hill, with a Spanish version of one of their big songs, and it is called Yo Quiero Fumar.
Well, time to blow this joint. Like the show? Let us know. We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermad.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next. Talk to you later.
Yo Quiero.
So, tell me about your son's car.
I was going to say, when we left last episode, so my son's car breaks down. Him and a roommate push it across a busy street to a really nice mechanic. Many trials and tribulations later, it's done. The transmission's done. It was started out as a used car. It's not worth putting in a whole new transmission. So, he's bummed. He gets it towed back to his apartment. But then he amazes me again. For an unlucky kid, he's pretty lucky. He sold it. He sold a car that wasn't running on Facebook Marketplace for not an insignificant amount of money. I was a little worried at first because he said, yeah, they didn't speak English. And I think they might have been Ukrainian. I go, oh my God, you just scammed some Ukrainian refugees. Because apparently they were talking with Google Translate on the phone. But no, whoever he sold it to literally did get in the car, turned the key, saw the engine went on, but put it into gear and saw it didn't move. And when they eventually took it away, they had to tow it away. So they fully understood that it engine runs, car don't go. So within days, he sold an unrunning vehicle on Facebook Marketplace. And then we told him, okay, come the end of the year, end of 2023, we've got some more money coming of your RESP. We can use that and you can go shopping again. It said, and in the meantime, we offered to drop off Doris's vehicle so he could get around the city and get to school. And no, he didn't want that. Then a week later, we finally convinced him, because he's going job shadowing, that we dropped off Doris's van so he could get to his job shadow. And in the meantime, he went and bought a just junker car, because it's manual, he really wants manual, that's not safety. For those of you not in Manitoba, not safety means that you can't get insurance, and you legally cannot drive without insurance. And he took it back to my new favorite mechanic, and the mechanic said he'd do a pre-safety, like he'd look at it and see what would be required to get it safetied. And again, not worth it. So, you know, he took the little bit of money he got from selling a car that didn't run and basically bought a car that does run but isn't worth running. Anyway, many discussions later, I was walking to work for a week because my wife and I work in two slightly different places, so she was driving with my truck and I was working, and that's why it was very nice that it was warm here in December. And maybe we'll talk about where he ended up in future episode with the next vehicle. But Kirk, we're not here to all about Eric's car stuff. We are here
because... Why don't we just start another podcast and it's all about Eric?
All about Eric. Yeah, that would be an interesting one.